former EPA administrator.
Okay, we're now moving on. All your good ideas have been captured and recorded, and we will be looking at those shortly, if I can get everyone's attention. So now comes a really fun part of the day, and that is when we make the announcements of commitments. And joining us to do that is Shirley Ann Jackson. I had the pleasure of serving in the Clinton administration when Shirley Ann Jackson was chairwoman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Now, this is so interesting. She is a theoretical physicist. I have no idea what that means, but I'm sure it's very, very important. But most importantly, she is currently president of Rensselaer Polytech Institute, and we thank you for joining us here today and to announce the commitments.
Thank you. Having sat at my table, I realize how much work people really put into thinking about commitments. I was told I'd be introduced perhaps by the voice of God or by Carol Browner, but I said Carol Browner is the voice of God. I'm very delighted to announce a few commitments this morning. First, I would like to invite to the stage Dawn Hague Thomas, who is president, and her fund, the GSMA Development Fund. Please. They have a commitment that is entitled Green Power for Mobile, and the intent is to promote the use of renewable energy across mobile networks in the developing world, to extend coverage in regions which currently lack connection, and to reduce reliance on diesel. And in particular, the GSMA Development Fund and its partners, and I will just very quickly read them, Barty, Dialog, Digicel, Idea Cellular, MTN, FT Orange, Oriscom, Roshan, Safaricom, S-Smart, Telnor, Vempelcom, Vodacom, and Vodafone, and Zane. And they have made a commitment to take a leadership role, particularly the GSMA Development Fund, in driving the adoption of renewable energy across the mobile industry in developing countries and helping to provide power to base stations that are off the grid, to develop green power toolkits for developing world mobile operators and build relationships with renewable energy vendors, to encourage the adoption of renewable energy in the mobile industry through regular action-oriented meetings and summits. Over the span of 5 years, this commitment will reduce the carbon load by 3.4 million tons. It also will ensure that 40 million people in developing countries are connected to mobile networks, enhancing their access to modern technologies and markets, and thereby boosting economic development. This represents a commitment of $1.5 million U.S. dollars over 5 years. Next, I would like to call Achille Colombo, Chief Executive Officer of Grupo Falck. Grupo Falck is committing to develop wind energy through the use of technical solutions that will help reduce future generations' dependence on fossil fuels. Through the development of wind farms, the commitment will help to construct 1,000 megawatts of wind generating capacity by 2012. Moreover, as wind farms produce and provide a clean and sustainable form of energy that does not emit any greenhouse gases, it will help address the climate change challenges of the 21st century. It will, in fact, support the European Council's goal of having 20% of total energy consumed from renewable resources by 2020. Over the course of 5 years, it will help reduce the carbon load by 1.3 million tons. The value of this commitment is worth $400 to $500 billion U.S. dollars in equity over 5 years, with a total project value of $2 billion. It involves France, India, Italy, Poland, Spain, Turkey, and the U.K. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next, I would invite Robert Banik, Vice President of Dundee Capital Markets and founder of Enhanced Geothermal Systems Company, Altaroc Energy. Robert Banik, along with his partners, is committing on behalf of IGDC to assemble a team of geothermal development experts to identify and develop the abundant but yet untapped geothermal potential of emerging and developing countries. For instance, the African Rift Valley, which intersects six countries, including Kenya and Ethiopia, is estimated to have 7,000 megawatts of potential geothermal energy. Developing this resource could make a meaningful impact on rural electrification challenges and help to reduce poverty. This commitment seeks to bring clean, new geothermal power infrastructure to such countries by developing electricity-generating facilities or district heating programs, having the potential to have a positive impact on thousands of lives. And let me just say that having visited not so long ago a township in South Africa and looking at some of the electrification challenges there, all of these sorts of decentralized energy generation opportunities are very important, and to actually have these kinds of commitments is critical. This has a value of $300 million U.S. dollars over a 3 to 5 year period. Thank you very much. In case any of you want to change your thoughts about the answer to the question that was posed, I'd like to invite Dr. Dan Nocera to come forward. Dr. Nocera is professor of energy and professor of chemistry at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. He holds a PhD from Caltech, the California Institute of Technology, and a bachelor's degree from Rutgers University, and I've known him and about him for a number of years. And he has an extensive and very distinguished background in research and education. And he's currently focused on basic mechanisms of energy conversion in biology and chemistry. And he's here to give us a progress report. Dr. Nocera.
Thank you. Thank you.
So with the title Professor of Energy at MIT, you would think I would be the most knowledgeable person at this conference in energy. And I was disappointed to find out this morning that I'm the second most knowledgeable person since Governor Palin was attending the conference. It was a big blow to my ego, but but there is something that's good about being an energy expert is one thing you should do, and it would be, it's really good, I think, for the CGI to do this, is to make sure they have all the numbers right, because it's really hard to solve problems when you don't have the right numbers. And there's a lot of money to be made in energy, and that's good and it's bad, because good is market will drive things, bad is sometimes you don't really want to know what the right answer is, or people don't want you to know the right answer because they could lose a lot of money. And so that's where CGI could be really important. And in this commitment, the one I'm here for, it really drives to the heart of the matter. You've heard a lot of big numbers, gigawatts and terawatts. You haven't heard terawatts of gigawatts and megawatts. What you should know is in the next 45 years, you need 15 terawatts, which is 15,000 times a gigawatt, which is 15 million times a megawatt. That's what the world needs. And so the commitment that I'm here to tell you a progress report on is the Solar Revolutions Project. And it came out of the goodness in the heart of a single family foundation, the Chazonis Family Foundation. And they gave MIT $10 million. And that, in terms of the big scale of things and money-wise, isn't very much. But what it did is it's energized MIT. So if you go on the web, I don't want to tell you about all the accomplishments. Just look on the web in the last year or look in Technology Review. But what it's done is it's collected around 15 to 30, 20 faculty, 30 to 45 students, totally committed to moving. There's a magic number people use. It's always 10 years. General Clark is here. Everybody always says 10 years when you're a talking head. So when I was on CNN, I've gone to 8.215 years. But what we're really committed to is under 5 years to try to actually come up with important innovation. So we were talking about why solar hasn't penetrated a market or wind. There's one word I can use. I can use a word, storage. So if you had storage and took out intermittency, that would solve a lot of problems. And then cheap. So that's what this the Solar Revolution Project has done, and it's done it at the right way. Guess where it's put the money? It's in the brightest, youngest minds in this country. And these kids are super energized. And just to give you a feeling, just out of the 1 year of discovery, there's three or four startups, and the amount of money behind these startups is almost incomprehensible because they're involving the top corporations in India and the top corporations in Africa to move this stuff forward as quickly as possible with the goal of making your place where you live a gas station and power station and you don't need anybody else's energy. All right? So that's what we're doing. That's what the Solar Revolutions Project has done. It's, like I said, only 30 to 45 students. MIT has become the solar hub, as I learned the other day on the web. There's a lot of innovation coming out of it, and it came all out of this one single act of kindness, the Chazonis Family Foundation, for $10 million. But if you want the progress report, just look on the web and see what we're up to. So thanks a lot.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the platform Carol Browner and our panel.
So we had lots of great questions. Thank you all for doing that. And what we're going to do, we had to pare them down in the interest of time. We've agreed on one question for each panelist, and they're going to have to give a, unfortunately, very, very brief answer, but I know they've been working on being concise. So let me go ahead, and Lester, I'm going to start with you. The question for you is, given that wind and solar are intermittent technologies, what technologies do we need to meet baseload needs?
Among the major renewable sources, geothermal is by far the best for baseload. But keep in mind, in much of this country, we need peak power. And that is solar energy. And California, for example, is moving quickly to develop solar to satisfy its peak power needs. Solar fits very well with rising air conditioning needs. The third thing is wind. And here, this question of wind intermittency has been answered by a Stanford team that assumed that we build the Eisenhower equivalent of the interstate highway system in a national grid. and develop wind resources on a huge scale. And what happens is that because no two wind farms have identical wind profiles, the larger the grid and the more wind farms you get, then eventually wind becomes baseload. And that's what we have to work for in this country.
Thank you. Marcel, we have a question for you about Europe, and I think you know, sort of what are the good things that are going on in the renewable world, and what are sort of the challenges?
If you take Europe, and it's difficult, you can't generalize it so much, but cost is still the issue, and there's, I think, no energy form that has not had subsidies in the beginning. So what is important is to have, like Germany has, a good grant system so that investments, you get half your equity in form of grants, but you get job creation requirements and things like that linked to it. That is working very well for Germany. We have feed-in tariffs in some of the countries which support the cost of the higher cost of the power. Now, that is needed also for a few more years. About 5 to 10 years if we look to grid parity, and that is necessary also to be expanded in other countries. Now, the big challenge that we see is that if you look at buildings, buildings emit about 40% or are responsible for 40% of the CO2. So working on energy efficiency is probably the most efficient way of saving CO2 and doing something good for the environment. But not selling energy is not in the interest of the utilities, so that's one of the challenges that we have to deal with.
And Peggy, the question we got for you is, what advice would you give to investors interested in China? What should they know? What should they be thinking about?
So China is ready to go green. We are spending billions of dollars. Just to give you an example, last year alone in new power grid construction, we spent $35 billion. The state grid, since proposing ultra-high voltage transmission lines in December 2004, we've built 645 kilometers by end of 2008 for AC, and we're building 2,000 kilometers for DC. So these are incredible amounts of money. Another good example is sweet sorghum for biofuel. We're using sweet sorghum on marginal land. They're building not one pilot plant, but four pilot plants in four provinces that are 400,000, 400,000, 200,000, 200,000 tons of ethanol each year. These are huge pilots. So my one advice to people who want to come to China and take advantage of this huge economic opportunity is not to come as individual companies, but to band together so that you can provide turnkey solutions to a country that doesn't speak English, right? So what we need to do is go to coal-fired power plants. We need to go to mayors. We need to go to the top 1,000 SOEs, band together as a coalition of smart grid companies, a coalition of coal plant abatement technology companies, and give people, the local decision makers, a vision of the ecosystem that will help them leapfrog. And in that way, you can make impact happen much, much more quickly. So this is part of the work that we're doing at Joint U.S.-China Cooperation on Clean Energy, is really to be a convener, like our Juice China Smart Grid Cooperative that we're announcing this afternoon. It's to be a convener and a translator. So it's a tremendous economic opportunity. I really welcome you guys to come to China and take a look at it firsthand, especially since we're having our international forum November 10th and 11th. Come to Beijing, come to Shanghai, see what revolution is happening on the ground in China.
Great. And General Clark, for you, who should pay for facilitating the transmission of renewable energy across the country? Who gets the bill?
Oh, that's easy. The consumer. That's the standard answer in every economics course. But it gets washed through the financial community. It's in the form of bonds. It may be in the form of bonds underwritten by local or federal guarantees. And what we need to do to facilitate this is we've got to pass. Harry Reid has a great piece of legislation in front of the Senate called Senate Bill 2076. Which creates seven energy superhighways to take solar and wind out of the western energy production areas and take them to the energy consumption areas. And so it paves the way for 765 kilovolt transmission lines, with expedited approval, and these will be financed by bonds. I would say this, though, you know, when you say who pays, it sounds as though somebody's going to pay more for this. But the truth is we're going to pay less if we do this, because energy congestion is so bad now on the East and West Coast that during the peak loading periods, people can't get electric power at all. And, for example, in the San Diego area, you may get, if you're selling power into the grid, you may get 10 cents a kilowatt hour on a 24-hour basis. But if you could sell it at peak power prices, they'll pay you 30 cents a kilowatt hour. People are desperate for this power. So, and ultimately, the consumer pays everything. So we're talking about lowering consumer costs by proper investments in the U.S. grid.
Let me ask you just a quick follow-up question. What would it cost, a fully integrated smart grid across the United States? What would that cost?
I don't know. The different figures, because it depends on how you define it and how much of the existing grid you can use and what your time frame is. We're anticipating a 30% rise in U.S. electricity consumption over the next 20 years.
Wow.
That translates into all of this rolled together between $700 and $900 billion worth of investment, which sounds like a lot of money. But there's a lot of people who would love to make those investments because they have really high returns, if you can make them. Problem is the regulatory approval. We're in a semi-deregulated, chaotic environment with hundreds of different authorities all passing judgments on every proposal for change.
I know a little bit about that regulatory environment. It can get a little complicated. We're now going to go to David Sandalo, who is going to tell us what you told us.
Hi, everyone. We had dozens and dozens of fantastic ideas coming back to the theme team, and I just want to start by asking everyone to give a big round of applause to the theme team back there, doing an incredible job pulling all this out. It was hard to choose from all these great ideas, but just to cite a few. Large property owners buy renewable energy, a lot of stuff along that line. CEOs of top 50 companies choose suppliers based on the level of renewable energy use. Somebody suggested the American Bar Association should analyze legal, regulatory, and financing aspects of renewable energy development. And someone suggested a Genius Award for renewable energy innovations. We had a lot of great specific ideas. A clean energy core for national service. This might have been the theme team's favorite. Students submit renewable energy ideas. CGI members vote on the best ideas and fund $100,000 each for them. Somebody suggested the U.S. military commit to 50% renewable energy use by 2015. Interesting idea. A competition between U.S. cities to reach 80% renewables first. A lot of discussion of transmission. Someone suggested a consortium to create transmission solutions, but there was a lot of recognition that transmission is a big part of the issue here. Demonstration projects for energy storage, also a lot of discussion of energy storage and recognition that in order to move forward on renewables, we need to address energy storage issues. And then a coalition of universities and energy companies to educate consumers. Two of our favorite glib suggestions were $1 trillion from the government. Somebody thought $700 billion sounded like a better number, but and Donald Trump sponsors an apprentice on renewable energy. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David. So, panelists, this is what we're going to do now. This is like the game show portion, the CGI's version of American Idol, and we didn't have to sit through a lot of really bad performances and singers. We're going to pick our favorite. Each person gets to pick. Maybe we'll all pick the same and go down the row and then spend a moment talking about how we would recommend making whatever commitments we pick, if it's the same one, that making that one happen or the individual ones. Lester, what's your favorite?
This reminds me, someone once asked me who my hero was, and I said,
someone once asked me who my hero was, and I said, Donald Trump. And they were disappointed, I think.
So you picked the Donald Trump answer? No, commitment?
The one I like is the competition between cities to see who can reach 80% renewables first. I think that would really set in motion a lot of activity, a lot of innovation, a lot of investment, and a lot of an enormous, obviously, reduction in carbon emissions.
Marcel?
Well, I agree, but I have two others, being the Genius Award and the...
networks is probably the most innovative area in the solar space. So encouraging that even more to get the cost down faster, to get better products, that is what we need.
I'll choose something different. The first one, large property owners buy renewable energy. In China, over the next 20 years, McKinsey says that we're going to be building 50,000 new skyscrapers, the equivalent of 10 Manhattans, in the next 20 years. Okay, every year we're building 2 New York cities in new floor space alone. The property managers in China are building not blocks, but they're building cities at a time, at least the equivalents of American cities. So, for example, one of our partners, Shuyan Land in China, they're committed to every single one of their future developments to be sustainable. So I think this is a great customer base. They're interested in looking at geothermal. For example, in Beijing, the MoMA building, right in the heart of Beijing, is already using geothermal. They're looking at cities like Hammersby to talk about waste collection and all these great renewable ideas, biogas, et cetera. So in China, at least, there's certainly a huge opportunity, economic opportunity, to take the top 10 developers who are literally building cities at a time and sell them renewable energy. So, again, I invite you to come over to our forum and meet some of these developers who are there.
General Clark.
I like all these ideas, but I'd like to see us do some demonstration projects for energy storage. This is pretty tough for the private sector to get a grip on, and I think if you look at the renewable sector, it's probably the one area. We all understand the transmission problems. We need more consortia. There are a bunch of them in operation. They're never as effective and as easy as we want. The demonstration projects we talk a lot about, but actually they do require a lot of scale, and they're probably not cost-effective right now. So if we got a little help on that, that would be good. As far as the Defense Department's concerned, I love these things. The Defense Department is trying to put wind and solar on its facilities. We've got some old air bases and other facilities that could be really great for that, but mostly, we want the Defense Department to do its job. I want to see it succeed in Iraq and Afghanistan, however we define that, and get those troops home. And the less we can do burdening them with other things, the better.
Well, okay, since I am the moderator, I get the final voice here. I'm kind of inclined towards the $1 trillion from the government. Yeah, we're going to spend $700 billion on bailing out the financial. Why not $1 trillion into energy and renewables? Actually, my favorite is CEOs of top 50 companies choose suppliers, and I think that's like a perfect CGI commitment, bringing together sort of the power of their purchasing power to really stimulate opportunities for smaller businesses to scale up and start producing these clean energy technologies. Please join me in thanking our great panelists and all of the good ideas, and thank you all for being here.
Ladies and gentlemen, the workshop session is now concluded. Please move directly to the plenary. The luncheon plenary is about to begin. Please move directly to the Metropolitan Ballroom for the luncheon. Qui
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. The program is about to begin. As a courtesy to your fellow CGI members, please turn your cell phones and pagers off for the duration of the program. Please take your seats. Thank you.